maybe you're experiencing and you're wondering about, well, what about a call? You know, I grew up in a Baptist church where, you know, there was a strong emphasis on the call. And I used to read 1 Timothy 3:1, and it says, if any of you aspires to the office of bishop, it's a good work you desire to do. And you know, I'd read that, and there I don't see anything where it says, call. I have called you to do this. It says if there's an aspiration in your heart, that's what you really want to do. So I'm at Texas A&M, planning to be a veterinarian. I later changed to animal husbandry, and the further I go along and it's time to begin to interview for jobs, and many times during those years I prayed, oh God, if you'll just tell me what to do, I'll do it. And yet I just seemed to walk in darkness. Still didn't know for sure. And so I go to one job interview and I'm miserable. And one day I'm walking back from class with a group of guys, and we have the same major, and they're all talking about the jobs. One fellow said, well, what are you going to do? And he said, well, I'm going to be a cattle buyer for Swift and Company. Well, what are you going to do? Well, I interviewed the other day, and I'm going to go manage this range. Another guy was going to run this feedlot and all that sort of thing. And there are about 14 or 15 of us in the same major. We all left class, walking back to our dorm, and one of them turned to me and said, Max, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. And as far as I knew, out of that group, because I'd witnessed a lot of those guys and knew them personally, the only one in that group that was trying to walk with the Lord, and everybody seemed to know what to do except me. And so he said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. And one of them stopped, and he turned around and looked at me. He was right in front of him. He said, man, you better be finding out. We're graduating in 3 weeks. So I go back to my dorm and I pray. And right after that, I was having my quiet time one morning and I came across Psalms 32:8. It said, I will instruct you and teach you in the way which you shall go. I will guide you with mine eye. And man, I got so excited that morning, my quiet time. God promised to guide me. And I was so excited, so I closed my Bible and I was heading off to class. And then I thought, well, what are you going to do? I still don't know what I'm going to do. But I knew one thing. God had promised to guide me. And right after that, God made it very, very clear I was going to seminary. And while I was there, after the first year, I knew I wanted to disciple people. I'd loved my experience in college. And God, I'd been in seminary for a year and a call came to go into student work. And God just seemed to say, this is where I want you. Now, I don't know, and I know many of you, when you begin to get serious about the Lord, the question usually comes, well, Lord, do you want me in a full-time ministry? And I don't particularly like that word, but you know what I mean by it. That I'll get my salary or I'll get my living that way, or am I to be a layman? And many of you are facing that, right? You want to know, God, if you'll just let me know what to do, I'll do it. Now, unless you're at that point, and that's a place where I think you have to be, God, I'll go anywhere, I'll do anything you tell me to do. And you don't need to have qualifications on that. Lord, I'll be a missionary if I'm married. See, just leave off the qualifications. Lord, I'll go anywhere you want me to go. I'll do anything you want me to do. Now, you know, God knows if He wants you married or not. And most of you, I'll just tell you, He probably does. But if He doesn't, it does not mean that you live an unfulfilled life. God will meet every need of your life. But there, you need to come to the point where you say, God, I'll go anywhere. I'll do anything you want me to do. Now, if God will allow you to work on a college campus, I think it's one of the greatest privileges in the world. There are not very many places where God has so many people on so few acres, and where He just kind of packs them in together, where you speak the same language, you're the same age. I think it's one of the greatest places in the world to work. Now, not necessarily if you're looking for the high salaries, if you're looking for the great acclaim from the world, but if you want your life to count, I cannot imagine any place in the world where it'd be a greater place than on a university campus. And the reason for that are several. They're your same age. You're going to find, and people find out when they get out and they go out into the world, like our son felt God's calling for him to be a layman. So he goes to Houston. He gets a job. There are three older men in that company, and he's the one young guy. Now, they work about in that office about 9 hours a day on an average, 9 to 10. He spends a lot of time in that office. He doesn't have a lot of great opportunities to disciple people at work. And so he has to do that more outside, because there's a couple of ladies that secretaries. Now they've got a few other guys coming in. But sometimes you're going to find out in the world it's very, very difficult. They're not, I mean, you may go to work, there may be people, but as soon as work is over, they get in their cars and they head out to different places. But on a university campus, I mean, I work in a particular dorm, a dorm that I'm over. There are 943 people, I believe, that are supposed to live in that dorm. Now, you know, one of our students, or if I go over there, it can be snowing outside. It can be raining. It didn't make any difference. There are 943 people there. Somebody's going to be home that night. I mean, if this guy's not home, go down the hall, that guy will be home. I mean, you can go to that one dorm or that one area, and you can have a tremendous ministry. If you're out in the world, maybe you're in a church, you're working with singles, and you may drive over here to this apartment. This guy's not home. Then you drive across here. He's not home. I mean, in the dorm, you can always find someone. There are people that are your own age. They understand your language. The tremendous thing about university students is the scheduling. Like, most of your parents could not be at this conference, right? Where will they be in the morning? They'll be at work. But see, with the university students, you have nearly a month off for Christmas. You have a week for spring break. You have your summers. Now, maybe some of you need to work. I know some of you work going to school. I know Jessica here is on our staff. She averaged working about 30 hours a week, didn't you, going to school? She got out debt-free, but I mean, she had to work a lot. A lot more college students are working. I'm aware of that. But I'm just saying that the schedule is such that there are breaks in that schedule. You know, if I'm trying to disciple a layman, the boss is paying him to work, not to meet with me for an hour. But on a college campus, a student may have a class from 8 to 9, one from 9 to 10, but he's off from 10 to 11. You can meet with him, or you can have lunch with him. The most available people in this nation, the most available people to disciple in this nation are on college campuses. You can usually, I don't care, I mean, I have students on my team that are electrical engineers, one of the hardest majors on this campus. But I can meet with these guys every week because they can squeeze out an hour. We have them in our home one night a week. Team of these guys, and they come. So there's, you can find times and schedule to meet with them person to person. And see, the thing we're talking about today, so much of discipling is person to person. Now, we have Vespers, we have big deals, we have conferences, we have spring breaks, but what really is going to pay off to a large degree is when you sit down with one student and you meet with that person. Because that way, When I meet with him, I can find out what his needs are, where he is in his life, and we can design something to help him progress in his Christian life. And I try to look at areas in his life in which I think he'll need help. I try to look for pitfalls, excuse me, down the way that I know he's going to face. If I'm dealing with a single guy, I know Satan's going to try to get after him about marrying the wrong person. I mean, that's just one of the things. That's one of his great tactics. He will try to knock him out of the race by getting to marry the wrong person or getting to marry the right person at the wrong time. I know finances are going to be an area. I know purity is going to be an area. And so, by meeting with people individually, and you can find time to do that. I mean, on the campus where I am, I mean, if we had a 48-hour day, I could still fill it up with people. And so, the great thing about working with university students is there's time to meet with them as individuals. Not only that, but there's an opportunity to get with them in small groups. You can find this person's, you know, he could meet on Monday night. This person could meet on Monday night. That person could meet on Monday night. And we can have a little Bible study group. Or we can get them together in small groups. Then also, on a college campus, you have the opportunity to design programs that are geared specifically for them. Like when the pastor stands to preach in a church on Sunday morning, he may have an 8-year-old on the pew and an 80-year-old. He cannot be as specific about those persons' needs. But when we design something for our meeting, our weekly meeting, I know basically we're going to design it to try to meet the needs of university students. Now, I know there are many various needs, but at least I know exactly the age I'm shooting for. And so there's some tremendous, I think, one of the greatest places in the earth for you to continue to grow once you get out of school, to grow as a Christian, is if you're working with university students. Because, see, all of our directors get to come to this meeting. I mean, they don't have choice. See, we get to go to a lot of great meetings. We meet every week. We get to share together. We get to learn from each other. We have different gifts, different abilities. Like, if this conference had to come about as a result of my planning the details, it would be a fiasco. But Jessica is tremendous on doing those things to help put it together. Now, so we can form teams. We are not by yourself. And the other thing, I mean, these are some of the tremendous advantages I see to working with university students. Also, for one of the first times in the life for many of these students, they're free to make their own decision. If this kid, this girl, is in high school and she wants to go to a Monday night Bible study, her mom and dad want to know where she is. Here are people, like we had a young man that was just reached. You heard the testimony the other morning. As Kevin M. talked about, this Muslim boy that became a Christian, and he was baptized about 2 or 3 weeks later in our church. Now, I tell you what, it would have been very hard to reach that boy back in his hometown. But now he's in the dorm. These guys witness to him. They do things with him. He sees their life. They pray for him. They go by and talk to him. And over a period of time then, see, he has an opportunity to get the gospel. I mean, it's amazing how people have an opportunity to know Christ once they get away from home. And they make their own decision. They can decide if they want to go to Bible study. They don't have to ask mommy. See? I know a number of years ago, a lady called me. She said, my son brought a friend home from college. And the boy she happened to bring home with him happened to be from Massachusetts. And this boy lived in Tulsa. And he just invited his roommate home for a weekend. And the mom got to talking to the boy and said, found out he wasn't a Christian. But he seemed very open. So she called and said, you know, I think if somebody talked to him, I think he'd accept the Lord. So I go over to the room, and I talk to him, and he accepts the Lord. And so he comes to church, and he makes a public decision that morning. And the pastor said, well, we're baptizing people tonight. Could you be baptized? And he said, well, I guess so. I told Sandra, I said, I know what I've got to do this afternoon. I've got to go talk to him about what baptism means, because he didn't know anything. All he knew was Jesus. I mean, that's all right at this point. So I go over to this room, and when I knock on his door, he comes to open the door, and he's on the telephone. And he's talking to his mom back in Massachusetts, and she says, and he says, no, Mom, nobody forced anything on me. No, Mom, it was my own decision. And I can tell she's really giving him a hard time. And then after a while, he says, well, Mom, he's here right now. And then he covers up the phone and he says, my mom wants to talk to you. And so I get on the phone and she says, what did you do to my son? And so I tried to explain we didn't do anything. We shared Jesus with him. And she said, do you know the reason we sent him to Oklahoma University? The reason we didn't send him to California or someplace like that? Because we didn't want him to be a member of some subversive group, and the one group I forgot about was a Baptist. And she was just so angry. So I tried to calm her down a bit. And after we hung up, I said to him, I said, do you think you ought to go ahead and be baptized tonight, or do you think you ought to wait? He said, no, I think I need to do it. I know that's what God wants me to do. So I said to him, Jack, does your mom, is she ever going to come out and visit you this semester? And he said, yeah, she told me when she said she's going to come see me. And he told me when. I said, I want her to stay at our house. You just tell her you have a friend where she can stay. And his eyes got big. He said, really? And I said, really? I want her to stay at our house. So she stayed at our house. We had a great time that weekend. I mean, we're friends today. That fellow's still walking with the Lord. But you know, the thing of it is, here was this boy, raised in Massachusetts, under that mother, and in that home, he would never have known about Jesus. Really known about Jesus. When they get away to the college campus, they're available. And you know, I think that God designed the college campuses not just for people to learn something for a career. I think one of the great things God did is says, people, open your eyes. I put them all together in one place. They can't all get away. Okay? I mean, there are thousands of them. Let me tell you another thing. And I had the statistics, and I thought I had the little brochure with me, and I got here and found out it wasn't in my briefcase, but studies have shown that if we're to reach over the large part of the world, you know that in America, campuses with over 5,000 students on them, almost half of the campuses in the entire world with over 5,000 students are in America. There are only about 20,000 university campuses in the entire world. If we want a chance to reach, get the gospel to the ends of the earth, I think the greatest place in the world is to start is on the college campus. And I want to read something to you. There's a little book called A Christian Critique of the University by Charles Malik, and he was secretary at one time to the United Nations. And let me take a moment to find it and listen to this statement. He says, the great Western institution, the university, dominates the world today more than any other institution. The Western university dominates the world more than any other institution, more than the church, more than the government, more than all other institutions. All the leaders of government are graduates of universities, or at least of secondary schools or colleges whose administrators and teachers themselves are graduates of universities. The same applies to all church leaders. How can you create economically without some technical training? And he says, but the technical schools which provide the training are some sort of many universities, and their administrators, their instructors, are themselves graduates of college or universities or technical institutes. The professionals, doctors, engineers, lawyers, have all passed through the mill of the secondary school, the college, and the university. And the men of the media are university trained. And some have undergone specialized advanced instruction in communication and journalism. It says, what about the family? In this age of universal education, no parents are unaffected by the university, for they themselves are graduates of secondary schools, colleges, or university. And everyone, parents, children, students, professors, administrators, professionals, church leaders, government officials, business people, industrialists, media people themselves, are constantly bombarded or exposed to the bombardment of the media. And all of those people, basically, were university trained. The universities then directly and indirectly dominate the world. Their influence is so pervasive and total that whatever problems affect them is bound to have a far-reaching repercussion throughout the entire world. See, if my dad went through the eighth grade, but his teacher had gone to school, everyone is affected by the university. And one of the greatest places in the world to reach people is a university. Now, one of the things that we found is there's been a bottleneck when it comes to placing people on the campuses. For example, California has over 250 campuses in that one state. The Baptist Student Union, or Christian Challenge, whatever you want to call it, is on 9 campuses. Why? Well, there are basically two reasons. One is financial. You know, if you take a bottle, you know, it's bigger at the bottom and it's got a neck, you know, where you catch a bottle, an old Coke bottle, any kind of bottle, and you turn that bottle upside down, I don't care how much liquid is in that bottle, it's going to come out as big as that spout, right? We've got a bottleneck, and it's called finances. I was at Glorieta many, many years ago when BSU was only on, at that time, about 250 campuses in the entire nation. And a fella came to me and he said, Max, I'm graduating from seminary. I'd like to do student work, but there are no openings. I said, no openings? He said, yes, I've talked to state directors here, and nobody's hiring. So I looked at him and kind of grinned and said, no openings? Why don't you go to Ohio State? Ohio State has over 25,000 that just live in the dorms, just in the dorms. They don't have a BSU director. What you're saying is not that there are no openings, but there's nobody there willing to stand and hand you a salary. Why don't you raise your support, trust God, and go up there and get on that campus? Now, right now, let me just tell you, if you're in the state of Oklahoma, we're not hiring any new BSU directors. The only way somebody's going to get hired is somebody's going to die or somebody's going to resign, because we don't have any more money. That's true in many, many places. I called the state director in Texas one day. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm sitting here trying to think how I can cut out $300,000 out of my budget. Most of the places, probably today, if we had 25 people ready to go into student work, you could not place them in this entire nation as far as somebody standing there handing you a good salary. But we could place hundreds and hundreds if people would be willing to raise their own support and go. And years ago, after I came to OU and Oklahoma University is growing to a rate of 1,000 students a year, I go to the state and say, I'd like to have an assistant. They said, there's no money for assistants. So I came back to our board and said, can I give away half my salary? And I'll give half of my salary to somebody else. We'll each have a half of salary and we'll replace the other half. They said, well, that's what you want to do. So we did that. It worked. We didn't miss a penny of our salary. And we went to people and said, I want to share with you one of the ways in which you can have a tremendous ministry on college campus. I know you pick up the paper sometime, you read the wild parties and things, but let me tell you, it's a great place to reach people. I can't do that by myself. I need a team. I'm not asking you to give what you're giving to your church or some other Christian organization. I don't want to hurt anybody's ministry. But if God has blessed you and you could give $25 a month, that would be a tremendous help. And so we did that. Well, 2 years later, we gave away two-thirds of our salary. So we could have six workers for what, at one time, we had one. And eventually we had two. And so we did that, and now we have six. And then we got even more than that now. Well, the point being, it's a great opportunity for you to trust God. Watchman Nee said, if you cannot trust God for your livelihood, you don't need to be in the ministry. And a lot of you, there are people that you're going to school with, they're going to get out. God's calling for them is going to be a layman. And they can give. There are people that you need to be carrying on relationships with that later will be able to give to help you in the area of student work. It's a great, great place to be. But it's something, an area in which, like, I get calls all along, somebody saying, hey, we really need a girl at Michigan State. Man, Derek, I'd love to have somebody at Arizona State to come out and work with us. So, basically, I would just encourage you to really pray if God puts that desire in your heart. I know the closer I got to graduating, the less I wanted to take care of sick cows or to, you know, work on a ranch somewhere. I'd gotten a taste of BSU trying to help people to grow, discipling them in college, and I thought, man, this is where it is. This is what I want to do. And so I didn't know where God would lead, but eventually God made that very clear. This is where I want you. Okay. Now let me pause at this point and see if there are any questions that you have. Now some of you may be like John Strapazon this morning. He is on a church staff working with university students. There are all kinds of different ways. Some may be on church staff where you get a salary. Great. Some of you be at BSU where you will receive a salary. We've had a fellow a number of years ago to go to Colorado. He went up raising his support because he wanted to get on a campus they didn't have salaries. They paid some salaries on other campuses, and then they came up on hard times, and so they took away all the salary. They'd eventually picked up his salary. Well, when they took away all the salaries, one of the guys is on a tremendous campus. Said, man, I'm leaving. Up here, I said, why don't you just stay and raise your support? I'm not doing that. And he was gone. Well, this other fellow, he had raised it before, so he started raising it again. You know, it gives you a freedom. You know, Bobby Pruitt is doing a workshop on the joy of raising support. I mean, Bobby, one of his sons here, have 8 children in her family. Going up to the University of Colorado, not only do they have to raise their own finances, they have to raise their operating budget. You know Neil Walker at USC, and I don't, anybody here from USC? How many did y'all bring from University of Southern California? 30 people are here from USC. There's some that live within 20 miles. We couldn't get to come to the conference. I mean, they pay a tremendous price to get here. Buying an airline ticket, flying in here from Neil Walker. Graduated from Oklahoma Baptist University. Came over and was with us a year at OU. He got a call one day, I believe it was from North Carolina or someplace. They wanted this church, offered him a tremendous salary at the time, a very good salary. Going to also give him a house to live in, and wanted him to come be their singles director. Well, meantime, he had heard about USC. And so one day he's explaining this to Melinda, his wife. He said, "Now, Melinda, here's our two options. We can go to North Carolina," and this was, how long's Neil been at USC? How many? About 15 years? I think at that time, his offer was about $35,000 a year plus a house. Now, I'm telling you, 15 years ago, that was a good salary. And so they said, so he's explaining to his wife, he said, "Now, Melinda, here's our choices. We can go to North Carolina. They'll give us $35,000 a year. They'll give us a house. We have operating money. We'll have the support of this church. Or we can go to USC, and they won't pay us a penny. What do you want to do?" She said, "I want to go to USC." He said, "I do too." So they'll go out there, and I know that their house payment alone, I mean, their rent was $1,500 a month. Can you imagine that? So he's out there, so over a period of time, he was going to have to move because the lady was going to sell the house. She offered to sell it to him, but it was something he couldn't handle. So he looks around trying to find another house. And we happened to be in Kansas City together at the seminary at the time for a course. And he said, "Max, I've looked. Now look, I'm going to have to move. We're going to have to pay more money. It's going to be smaller." I said, "Call her and see how much she wants for the house." He said, "Why? I don't have the money." "Neil, call her. Find out." So we figured out how much his house payments were and how much money he would need to be able to keep his house, buy that house, and keep his house payments at the same place. You know what he needed? $90,000 down payment. I said, "Well, good. Let's pray and trust God for $90,000. So, his pastor and I and Harold Book and a number of people called, and you know what? Got together. $90,000. And he bought the house. Now, how long do you think it'd take you living in California to save $90,000? And you know, everyone on our staff, everybody can give testimony to the tremendous blessings of God. I can remember at times when we looked at our checkbook and we had $45 to our name. I'm not talking about that's what we had in the checking account and we had some other place. I'm talking about that's what we had. And yet to see God provide again and again and again. And one day we have a chance to buy a house. But it's going to take, the guy wants $1,200 down payment. We've got $800 we've saved our name. So I offer him $800. And he said, "No, I can't do that." And I said, "Well, sir, the reason I offered you $800 is because that's all I got." And he said, "Well, if you'll wait till I get my house built, you can have it for that. Or I'd take $1,000 right now." And he said, I said, "Well, we needed to move. School was about to start." So he said, "And I'll carry you for the $200. And so we thought in over a few months we could pay that, which we did. And then we just had a baby boy. Now, they didn't have all the hoogies and all these. I mean, they used to have cloth diapers. We didn't have a washer and dryer. So Sandra's going to have to go to the laundromat. And this guy calls and he said, "You know, till I get my house built, I'm going to have to just store that washer and dryer. Would y'all like to use it till I get my house built? Well, yeah, we would. Until we can save. But I'm telling you, I wouldn't take anything in the world for the opportunities that we have to trust God. And it's still that way. Not necessarily because a state comes and says, I want to pay your salary. I said, I want you to. But eventually, they said, this is state policy. Well, I still raise some money to put in BSU. And we have to, for every $1 we get from the church that, like most BSUs that help to run it, we have at least $3 that come in from individuals just for the operating, plus all that the staff has to raise. I wouldn't want it any other way. Because you learn something about trusting God. I wish you could have, Bobby could tell you about the cars. You know, they need a car and some guy comes and buys them two cars. You know? I mean, just phenomenal. Guy calls me one day. He was mayor of Oklahoma City. He's now running for for Senate from Oklahoma. Was in our ministry. And he called one day and he said, Max, John Marks up in Colorado on a BSU campus. And he had known John Mark. He said, how's he doing? I said, well, I don't know. I can find out. You mean about his support? And he said, no, I want you to find out if he needs a car. And so I called him. I said, John Mark, how's your car? And he said, you know, I really need a van. And so I called this guy back and he said, he needs a van. He said, you tell him to go down and buy him a van. Go find the one he wants and I'll buy it for him. And he told me why he did that. He said, you know, one day we were talking about getting a new car. And my young son's about 10 or 12. And he said, he's about 10 or 11 or 12 at that age. And he said, well, Dad, when we get it, let's get this on it. And we want a CD player. We want this. We want this. And he said, you know, that scared me to see how my son was growing up just focused on things. And so he said, we prayed about my wife and I. We thought, you know, there's really not anything wrong with the car. So they talked to their son and said, instead of us buying a car for ourselves, why don't we buy a car for someone that needs it? So that's what he did. I mean, if you had a chance to listen to people tell their stories as to the way God's provided. So God will take care of you. I promise you that. Now, it'll be tight at times, but you're going to experience God in a way a lot of people never get to experience it. Okay, any question? Jessica, you want to add anything?
Huh? I'm Jessica McCarger, and I'm on staff at OU. Been there, was there as a student for 5 years, and then I've been on staff for 7 years, finishing up 7 years. I think, I guess I would add, maybe this is more for you girls than you guys, but Max had mentioned when he first started sharing, just the idea of waiting for a call, you know, being called to ministry. I would also echo that I still haven't had a call for collegiate ministry, and I've been doing it for 7 years. And I just really, you know, sense God leading me to just invest my life in people. And I think that's the bottom line, is just, you know, what is your heart for ministering to people, and where does he want you to do that the best? Where can you best glorify him in that? And for me, you know, I went, when I was in school, I graduated with 2 degrees, one in film and video studies and one in professional writing. And as I was in school, I worked as well and had a sense of the working world, and just didn't feel like, you know, that's where God necessarily had me. But as I discipled girls, just really, you know, he got a hold of my heart to really invest in them, and I really saw that really had great value and great purpose, at least for how he wanted to use my life. And when God really finally, you know, basically shared with me that was what he wanted to do with for the next few years of my life. At least that's what I thought. I thought when I came on staff it would just be for 2 years, and you know, then probably I would get married and have kids and all that stuff, and that didn't happen. But maybe it will still happen. Just that I think I think it's really important to understand, at least as a gal, maybe more so than a guy, that I think you're created to be seasonal, and that probably it's harder for you to settle in and say, okay, I'm going to be here for 10 years or 20 years doing collegiate ministry. But if he just has you doing it for 1 year or two years, that's fine. You know, just to plug in and wherever he has. And see, I still don't feel like, you know, necessarily, and I think that's hard for Max, because I think he really wants me to, you know, well, I'm going to be here for 10 or 20 years, but I think that's harder to do. And it's just to walk with God and see where he has you. I don't know if there's anything else you want me to add to that. Okay. Anyway, I'll be around. If any of you gals have questions, you can come visit with me about, you know, maybe that next step, making that choice for that next step in collegiate ministry.
Thanks, and I think that is important in that you're not necessarily committing the rest of your life to student work. I mean, as long as the Lord is the Lord of the harvest, we work in the vineyard where he tells us to. But some of you, while you're single, you're young, you're very much their own age. I mean, when I walk on the floor of the dorm, they wonder, are you the dean of men? Are you somebody's grandpa? Who are you looking for? See, you can walk on the camp. They don't know, maybe, that you're not a student. And so, for the next few years, as far as your own growth and your opportunity to minister, while you're young, you're their own age, you can make a tremendous contribution. And if 2 years later, God leads you to be married or leads you somewhere else, that's fine. We had a girl on our staff. She and her husband are now missionaries to China. And I remember we had many talks along. She said, now, you know, Max, I don't know if I'll be here for sure next fall. I said, well, Linda, if God didn't lead you to be here, that's fine. How long did she work at OU? 17 years? But she never knew for sure how God would lead her. And so it's okay. You don't have to say, hey, I'm here forever. Most of the time when people come, we say, well, we'd like for you to be here for 2 years, but if you're here 2 weeks and God tells you to leave, leave. We don't need a Jonah on board, you know. And so, but usually, now we have one couple. He had been a journeyman in Cambodia and came back, and they thought they wanted to be here 1 year before they go back to Cambodia. So we said, fine. And now they've decided they'll probably wait another year. Well, that's fine. By the way, y'all need to know Selah. Selah, stand up. Let them see you. Selah is from Cambodia. And some of the students went over there that went with focus teams. She became Christians. We had three journeymen from OU that were over there for a little over 2 years. Her fiancé became a Christian, then she became a Christian. And we have the privilege to have Sandra and I to have Selah to live with us for a year. And she is very, very interested. She and her fiancé and doing student work in Cambodia. So it's fun to see what God's done. Just here were three of our students. They got out of school. They first went over. We had 9 to go one summer and 13 from Oklahoma Baptist University. And they kind of had got into a squabble over there as far as tried to be a coup, I guess you could say. And so they had to leave the country within a week. Well, when they came back home, they thought, we didn't do what we really wanted, get to do what we wanted to do. So once they graduated, they went back and was as journeymen. And God is, I think when they got to university, they were two Christians. A year later, they were about 40, something like that. And so, and then Ashley here was also a journeyman in Cambodia. So there are tremendous opportunities overseas, too. I mean, right now, Alan Stickney, if you want to do that. Okay, any questions that you have? Comments or questions about student work? No questions? Are you sold on wanting to do it? Well, tell God, God, that's what I'd really like to do. You know, when I met the girl, I began to pray about it, and I thought, now, Lord, I don't want this girl if it's not the one. But pretty soon I was telling God, God, I just want you to know it's okay with you. I want her. Okay? Somebody had a question. That's a possibility, and it may depend on, and we have that with some, and one of the good things about it, you already know the campus, you know the situation. Sometimes for cross-training, for you to learn under another person, sometimes it's good for you to go to another campus. I don't have any rule about that. See, the other thing about it, anytime you move, you start all over. I mean, you know, if you graduate, you move to another city, you got to start all over. And that's one of the great things about maybe remaining where you are. And incidentally, if you're getting help and you're getting training, you're still learning, I think a lot of time for you to stay where you are for a while is very good. Some of you may be in situations where you think, and that may depend on your director, or where you are, the leadership over you, might think, you know, I think I've learned about all I'm going to learn here. And then it might be good for you to go somewhere else.
You know, another thing too, it might be also good to, like, go out and get some work experience before you get out on a campus. Just, I think that's a good idea, and having an understanding of what the work world is like, because it is very different. And I think you need to have a little bit of that in some cases. If you've never, especially if you didn't work going through school, I think it's a good it could be a good thing at least to do that.
You know, we felt like with Jessica, she had already had a lot of work experience even by the time she graduated, you know, from college. But that is good. Some of you may want to get out there for a while. Like, for example, one of the fellows that just came on our staff, graduated from OU, went to another school, got a law degree, worked as a lawyer for 8 years, and then decided, you know, I really want to give. And he'd had a really, really good ministry. But he decided, I really would like to work with university students. So he came back and was on the staff. So, and one of the reasons for that is learning to use your time well. A lot of people, if you've never worked out there and faced a schedule and things, and you go right into a full-time ministry, sometimes it's easy for you to waste a lot of time. Okay? Uh-huh. Yeah. That's more difficult. And some of you may be on commuter campuses. So you have to contact the students around lunch. I tend to speak of dorms because that's where my mind is. But I was a BSU director in Dallas at the medical school, Southwestern Medical School, for 5.5 years. There were no dorms. But I found that on Monday we could have lunch together and just tell the guys to brown bag it, bring your lunch. And so the hour between, we could meet together as a group, and then part of the time we'd have a Bible study one night a week, and we'd find different times. But the whole thing is to contact them. But at least, even though they're commuters, they're on that campus, and you can walk on that campus and maybe ask a student, hey, after you get out of class today, could we get some time together, and that type of thing. Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay. Now, you're a freshman where? Yeah, okay, freshman college. Let me just say this to you. While you're in college, major, your number one priority should not be your studies. And that's not what Mom and Dad told you, right? Your number one priority needs to be your walk with God. Now, that doesn't mean you neglect your studies. But see, if your number one priority is your studies, when you graduate, your number one priority will shift to your job. And girls, do you want to be married to a man whose number one priority is his job? You don't. So while you're in college, the greatest thing you can do is not worry so much about what you're going to do in the future. You try to have a ministry where you are. You pray. Just like if somebody had told me a year before I was going to seminary, I thought, you are nuts. Because that thought had never entered my mind. I mean, I had no desire to do that at all. And so I tried to concentrate on making disciples, walking with God while I was in school. And then just right before, just about before I graduated, God put that in my heart and made it clear. And one of the reasons I felt like at the time I needed to go to seminary was due to the fact that I wanted to help get a vision over among Southern Baptists for disciple making. And because we didn't know much about it. I mean, we have Sunday school, church, that sort of thing. But as far as discipling people, passing it on like John was talking about, Southern Baptists had no vision for that. And so that's why I felt, and I'd worked all my life growing up. I mean, so I'd had a lot of work experience. And so that's why I felt like that's what I needed to do. So I would say don't worry so much about that right now. Concentrate while you're in school on what God wants you to do. Be praying about it. I prayed much about it. Oh, God. And I used to tell God when I was thinking about changing out of veterinary medicine into animal husbandry because that's going to be a 6-year course. I said, God, if you'll just tell me what to do. And then sometimes I tried to set time limits on God. I'd say, now, God, I want to know 2 weeks from today. I'm going to really pray. And 2 weeks from today, I want to know what you want me to do. And I prayed and prayed. Boy, 2 weeks come up and it's just like a black cloud. Just no answer. And I didn't need to know then. God says, hey, I will guide you. He promised to do that. So you get on with doing what he's asked you to do. Keep praying. Keep looking. And in due time, if you're willing to go anywhere, do whatever God wants you to do. You know, and Vance Havner used to say, people pray, God, use me, God, use me. He said, you get usable and he'll wear you out. And so the thing you need to be doing is concentrating now, learning to make disciples, walk with God. And it's tough, I mean, where you are. I know that. I know that the college campus situation, you're going to have some failures, but you keep working at it. You're learning things that are going to help you for the rest of your life. Keep praying. Open to the Lord, and then see when it comes time to graduate where God's going to put you. Now, incidentally, let me just say this. I think when you graduate, too, you need to think in terms of where can you be, where you can grow, and you can be effective, not in terms necessarily of just career. In other words, if you, let's say you're an English teacher. You know they teach English in every city in America. So you just say, well, I got an offer and I'm going to go to this city and teach English. And then I hope there's a good church. I hope I can get some help. Well, it's better to go somewhere where I think you know you can get the help and there look for a job. And I think even this about student work. You know, we have a girl that's out here at USC. Well, one of the reasons we like for her to be at USC is because we know Neil Walker and know that she's going to get some help and training while she's there. And so, just pray that God will lead your life. You know, He created you. He knows exactly what way He made you. He knows if He wants you in student work. If so, He knows where He wants you. He knows how long. You know, you're single. I know this thing of marriage is much on your mind. That ought to be something that you really pray about. Probably the person you're going to marry is somewhere today, alive. So be praying for them. Maybe somebody you know, maybe somebody you don't know. But you be praying. And the thing of it is, if God doesn't want you married, I don't care who you married the wrong one. Okay? And so you don't set your heart on marriage, you set your heart on God. And certainly it's a concern. But you pray about that, leave that in the hands of God. And you know, the most unattractive girls I knew when I was single are the girls waiting to get married. You know, it's just obvious. That was their big goal. Girls, you get down to business with the Lord and determine you're going to walk with God either with or without a guy. And you will become very, very attractive to some guy in due time if that's what God has for you. And that's usually what God has for you. Okay? I mean, He's designed us for marriage. There are some exceptions, and if they are, God will meet your needs and greatly use you anyway. All right, any other question or comment? Is our time gone? Okay, let's pray together. Father, I thank You for every person in this room. And I've been where they are, wondering, God, what do You want me to do? And being fearful at times, not sure I could do it, not sure I would trust You, afraid that I would maybe make a wrong decision along the way. Father, I pray for every person here that You will guide them, that You will help them to learn all they can while they're in school about making disciples, that You will use them, and Father, that You will give them the guidance as to where You want them. If it's in student work, Father, You know, we would very, very much desire, and we pray that You would raise up laborers for the campuses of the world, that we might influence these people that can have such a great influence in the future. So we thank You for our time together. Lord, I thank You for the Jessicas and the Ashleys and people like this who are willing to go at a time when many girls are just, well, I'm going to try to be more available in case some guy comes along. And they're willing to plant their lives and give them away to people. And so, Lord, help us to all be people who trust You and who give our lives to doing what You told us to do. And we know our journey on this life is as a split second compared to eternity. So help us to be faithful to You. Help us to learn all we can at this conference. Find out what You want us to do as a result of what we've heard. And go back and be used of You on our campuses. Because we prayed in Jesus' name. Amen.